The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can. Well, to do it then. Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now then, welcome along. Football Show underway. We have Dan McDonald back with us. We'll be joined presently by Kevin Caban. Jamie Moore is over at Tala Stadium. Ireland 3, Ukraine 2. 75 minutes on the clock now, Jamie. Ireland hoping to see this win out at this stage.
Yes, in front of a record crowd for women's game, international game in Ireland, Joe. The attendance just being confirmed of 5,238. That beats the previous record from their opening game of this campaign against Montenegro when there was 4,047 here. So around 1,200 more. They'd hope to have 8,000 here, but obviously a lot of the season ticket holders who've got the tickets haven't come. But there is still a very good crowd here. And Ireland retook the lead in the 52nd minute, having been 2-0 up and pepped back to 2-2 just before the break. And we spoke, Joe, about Megan Campbell's long throw from wide areas into the box. But the goal came as a result of a long throw from in and around the halfway line. She threw it over the top for Rhianna Jarrett, who's already scored and got an assist in the game. And her cross into the box found Denise O'Sullivan. Her shot was blocked on the line by a Montenegrin defender, or by a Ukrainian defender, should I say, sorry. But unfortunately for them, it bounced off another defender, Natia Pastelayer, and she was running back towards her own goal and bounced into the net. So Ireland leading 3-2 here with around 13 minutes left.
Okay, cheers, Jamie. We'll check back in with you at full time. 77 minutes on the clock now, Dan. Again, for people just tuning in, Katie McKay with the opening goal. It was a really good opening goal, by the way. Definitely the best move of that opening 25 minutes. Rhianna Jarrett, who has led the line very well, worked incredibly hard, took advantage of a bad goalkeeping error from a corner. She really just had to stoop to head a ball in at the back post. And then Ukraine hit back. Not good for Marie Horan the Irish goals.
Horrendous,
yeah. Yeah, really bad. It was a nothing cross, no pace on it, head height, no pressure on her, and just completely fumbled it. And it was a tap-in for Ukraine. And then there was a Megan Connolly miscue in the area at 2-1, which again, you could argue Horan should have saved the resulting shot. But either way, between Connolly and Horan, it was another bad goal to give away. So it was 2-2 at the break. And about 10 minutes into the second half, Denise O'Sullivan, who certainly looks maybe like the most technically gifted or one of the technically superior players
in America,
out there.
Yeah.
She followed up on good work from Jarrett. Again, mix up in the Ukraine box. Probably technically an own goal, but Denise O'Sullivan had a big hand in it. So that's where we are, 3-2 and a record attendance.
Obviously it's not a full house as was trumpeted, and 5,328 was just yeah, it's a lot of empty seats.
It was 3,000 short than what was said.
Yeah.
Because Eddie Russell's texted in to say, what's going on with the FAI? I would have gone with my wife to see Ireland tonight only for information over the last few days saying that the game was sold out. I'm at home watching. There are hundreds of free seats available.
Yeah, a lot of free seats available. I'm not seeing this side of it where the camera is. Even 5,000 seems like a high number. But
do you want to explain to people who didn't catch the news?
There was an option. Basically, season ticket holders were given the option to take tickets, I think. But we had a tweet in earlier, I think, from was it Owen Allen maybe suggesting they were given the option until September 30th to take tickets. I think it was by email. I'm just going to get it up here. Season ticket holders were given the option of downloading complimentary tickets prior to the 30th of September for both games. So there was this match and the under-21s on Thursday night as well. Again, trumpeted as sold out. Completely optional, but many people have done so just to cover themselves. This was Owen's opinion, but with little intention to attend. So,
just to interrupt, do people have to pay extra to do that?
Oh, I don't know. Complimentary tickets. So, no, I think it was a perk for season ticket holders to get to go to these games.
They may have to change that system because clearly a lot of people said, well, this is a shot to nothing. I can just tick this email box. I get my free ticket for the game. And if I decide not to go on the night, well, I don't lose anything.
Yeah, and I think there's probably because there's so much positivity and there's a real drive and determination and push behind the 2020 campaign that it was seized upon. Sold out game. This is brilliant. This is fantastic. And I think that was probably the priority. And that was, everyone was really willing to get behind that rather than necessarily thinking, well, is this system actually going to mean the stadium is full? And Jamie did mention earlier that this obviously was sensed by some people in the FAI that they had to ring and contact people and say, well, actually, are you planning to go?
Yeah.
Because the weird optics now, and you mentioned that text of people who wanted to go have basically been turned away from this match.
Or didn't bother trying to get tickets.
Yeah, or they weren't given the option. There's always a walk-up on the day, and I think there would have been coverage around this match. And it just obviously there's I understand the desire to make the stadium full, and by getting onto all your season ticket holders is a huge market, and you hope that people who've never gone before will go again. And so you have to do something like this to drive numbers. I get that. I don't think it would be unfair to just to hammer people on this basis. But there's people who could have gone who aren't there because people who are sort of casual about it sort of said, I may not. It's a big win for them though, potentially. I mean, that is the one thing. I know there's 10 minutes to go. It must be said, like, the Women's World Cup in the summer, watched quite a bit of it. And I thought it was decent. And, you know, I think part of the journey here is to be able to critically assess the games and comment on them. And, like, this match is, for a key game, like, some of the quality of some of the defending and goalkeeping has been pretty poor, to be honest. You know, it's been pretty average. But there is obviously a big issue in terms of the gulf. I mean, Ukraine are second seeds. They've lost 8-0 to Germany twice. Like, there's a big gulf between the have and the have-nots, I think, at the top of the women's game. And it's a big gap to bridge. And, like, you know, this game's had some entertaining forward play, but some of the other play, it must be said, has been pretty poor. You know, so it's that's reflective of the journey that has to be travelled as well too, that there's some really good teams at the top end of the game and Ireland are trying to get to that tournament, and that's how you improve. You can't just tune in and expect them to be the real deal straight away. But this game has been a real mixed bag. I think, to be honest, you have to call it and say it as such. It has been a real mixed bag.
Oh, no, some of the mistakes
error
have been
strewn, you know.
Some of the mistakes have been.
But that can be a difficult stadium to play in sometimes with the conditions. I'm not sure if the wind is a factor.
Yeah.
But still, it's been poor.
Very poor. You're not out on your own there. Some really terrible mistakes at times. Just on the ticket thing, to round that off, the general public will let you down. And they have here. Like, so the guts of, you can say, 3,000 people have ticked the old I'll go along box, yeah, and then just not shown up. Now, a percentage of them will have very legitimate reasons, so it's not like everyone.
Tala can be hard to get to. This is a slight problem with Tala, and people might be there this evening, 6:30, half 7 kickoff, the Lewis, or the traffic, and then, like, this could be the thing. This isn't like a women's football thing, because the 21s on Thursday could have the same issue. People might say, oh, Aaron Connolly's not in the squad, I might just not go now.
Yes, that's what I would class as not a legitimate excuse.
Mm.
If it's, I'm not arse going because the traffic's bad and it's hard to get to, well, you've had a few days' notice to
but
get there.
That's clearly what would have happened.
Maybe. I mean,
a lot of people. It's a couple of thousand people, Joe. It's not.
I think a percentage of them said, hang on, there's no extra cost here. Okay, I can tick the box. And then if it doesn't suit me absolutely perfectly on the day, if work doesn't go all to plan, then I just don't go and that's fine. So I think going forward, the FAR are within the rights to say, season ticket holders, we value you, we love you, but you did tick this box, and then we can see from the old scanner machine that you didn't show up on the night.
Mm.
So in future, the next Irish Women's International, if you want to reserve one of those tickets, you're absolutely allowed to do so. It's going to cost you €10, or it's going to cost you €15.
There should be a booking fee or something with it, you know?
And nobody can complain then if they say, well, hang on, why am I paying a fiver or €10? Well, the answer is you got the last one for free and you didn't show up. So we reserve the right to say, and it's just changing some small print in their deal. I mean, if they continue to show up and it's a perk that you get it for free, absolutely no problem. That's great.
Yeah.
But you can't have people saying, well, penance free, I'm just going to take a ticket, not let somebody else get that ticket, not show up because it just didn't suit me on the day. Because I guarantee you they would have shown up at the Aviva Stadium for a crunch game between the men's team against the second seeds in a group.
Oh, no, absolutely.
So that's
absolutely
the reality. They kind of treated the ticket with a sense of disdain is a too strong word, but a certain casual, I'll take it. Well, tough luck.
Yeah.
And if you give it to people for free on those terms, if that's how you pitch it to the market, then the market's going to respond that way.
Yeah. It is a balancing act because you want to get people to support the team. But again, you know, there comes a point where, like, you want realistic coverage of where things are at. Like, a record attendance is great, but the real progress is a record attendance of people who paid into the match out of demand. And I think there is a certain level of interest now that there's a sense of, you know, there's always a cosmetic element, and I'm a big fan of, like, you know, yeah, for these games, I mean, the FAI Cup final is coming up and I'd be a big supporter of, get kids teams and, you know, throw around tickets and stuff. So there's a balancing act. But between that and saying, well, there's a 5,000 people, a record crowd, like, you know, when 5,000 people are paying in to the match, you know, as a priority event for them, that is the next step along. So there comes a point where in the next campaign, maybe, that this service just isn't offered at all. You know, that this isn't there. It's like, you know, your first refusal on tickets, but you have to pay for them.
Yeah.
You know, and that has to be the real barometer of progress. And there's a balance now between positivity and promoting it, and also portraying it as it is. And you would hope, like, there's a big game coming up against Germany in this group, which is going to be of a massive attraction, and that shouldn't need to go to season ticket holders. That should actually be, let's see how many tickets you can sell, and then if it gets close to it and the ticket take up is whatever it might be, then you might look at kids or various ways of trying to fill the place.
Or you can email all your season ticket holders then and say first come, first served.
Yeah, or a discount price or whatever it might be, but that probably needs to be the strategy that's applied.
Yeah, after tonight I think that's fair. It's worth trying for tonight, but the public will let you down sometimes.
Yeah, and I just don't hope it's not all out. Well, this is the record crowd, this is the story. I mean, like, you have to aspire to more than that when there's a lot of promotional aspect to that.
3-2 with 5-6 minutes to go. It will be a very good win for Ireland, especially after throwing away a 2-goal lead, that's for sure. On the men's team, Conor Harahan was out in front of the media today, amongst others. You were there. So just a quick snippet of what he was talking about. Naturally, I presume this is the rule of the week, that anyone who's put forward to the media has to be asked about Aaron Connolly.
That's just Aaron Connolly week.
It's the first question.
Aaron Connolly week.
Have you got an Aaron Connolly story to tell? Mm. So he was asked about what it was like to play against Aaron Connolly, because Aston Villa obviously faced Brighton. A couple of weeks ago, here was Conor Harahan.
Yeah, fantastic for him. It's always great for the Irish setup when there's lads doing well. I played against him a couple of weeks before that in the cup against Brighton, and he played 60 minutes in that game, and he gave our two centre halves a tough night. So, when he was banging in a few goals at the weekend, that was no surprise to me. He's got, that energy and that work ethic to give centre halves a tough day at the office. And he did that on Saturday against Spurs, so I was delighted to see it.
We'll talk Aaron Connolly to Kev a little bit. We won't, again, rehash.
It was great at the weekend.
We won't rehash last night's show again by talking too much about Connolly between ourselves. But Harahan was then, as you might have heard the start of it there, he was in good form himself for Villa against Norwich. He scored one, he set one up, so he was asked about that.
The weekend, it kind of shows that hard work does pay off with them kind of moments. But, one that I won't be resting on. Like I said, I'm never satisfied with my game. I'm always my worst critic. Working on my game again this week to try and improve, and it'd be something maybe later on in my career or when I'm finished that I look back on with great pride. But it's not time to look back at it now. It's time to kick on again.
Yeah, is there anything that you've identified in your few games in this qualifying campaign that you can improve on and want to improve on?
I probably want to score a couple of more goals. If I'm being honest, I've had 14 caps now. I've scored one. It was great to get my first goal, of course, an important goal as well, but I've always managed to score goals over the years, so a couple of more goals, maybe hopefully in the next 5 or 6 games or whatever it is, hopefully I might nick one or two.
In fairness to him, the goal he did score was a doozy. It rained tennis balls. What a moment.
But I suppose he wants to score one from play. That's the next thing, is he can be so effective in general play, not just a dead ball, sharp shooter as such,
You got an insight there into his mentality, his own worst critic. He's asked about a very good moment in the Premier League for Aston Villa, and he's saying things like, well, I'm not going to rest on my laurels. This guy's really fought through and made it now, hasn't he?
Yeah, like, he's 28, and he still feels like a newbie, in terms of international football. And in fact, that was his first Premier League goal at the weekend. It's his first Premier League season. I don't know if you saw the story about him recently. He replied to a tweet from 2014. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Like, when he was at Plymouth, that somebody doubted him. And he said at the time, something about aspiring to the Premier League. And someone said, listen, you're a good player, but, get real. And he said, can I not dream? Yeah. And he obviously stored that tweet away for the guts of like five and a half years. I think it was January 2014. And, 5.5 years later, he was able to produce it. But the interesting thing was, like, he played the first game of the season against Spurs and then got dropped. And, like, he has this big Premier League summer going, here I am, Premier League player. I'm sure he has that sort of sense of desire and anticipation to push home. And then after one game, he's out of the picture. And he had to play in those League Cup games. I was there that game against Brighton. I mentioned it last night. Harahan was excellent in a very advanced role and scored and made a goal. And he's been a victim sometimes at Villa that they've got McGinn and Grealish, very attacking midfielders. And he's had to play a more withdrawn role at Villa at times, when actually he's someone that's pretty effective high up the pitch. And he's had to be patient.
Yeah.
But he's responded well to being dropped. And I mean, at the weekend, as you mentioned, like, he was a key player at Norwich.
He's technically very good, which is always welcome. That tweet you mentioned, so in January 2014, he'd clearly done an interview in the local paper, and somewhere along the way, he had said, yeah, the dream is to play in the Premier League. So Craig Taylor on Twitter said, good article, mate. You're Argyle's best player, kid. No danger. But the Premier League, there's ambitions and there's reality. And Conor Horan replied in 2014 to say, something to work on every day. Can I not dream? Question mark. Craig responded, of course, kid. I think you're a decent player. And I rate you. I'm just being honest. And even Craig ventured to say as well, I have limitations in my work too.
He's more, you wouldn't even call that like trolling. That's actually more reasonable. Like it was a bit of grief, but it was at the sort of benign end of the scale.
If anything, it's worse. It's so reasoned.
This is the thing. It's like,
I have limitations. You have limitations.
I support your club. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm a supporter of yours. It's just, I don't think you're going to make Congress. You know, you should stay at a lower level of local politics. You know,
Craig's saying, I'm not going to be the best accountant in the world. You're not going to be in the Premier League.
It's just, yeah.
So Harahan, just the 4.5 years later.
5.5.
Correct, 5.5.
Time is flying by, Joe.
Not the best accountant in the world. Yeah. Hi, Craig. Remember this tweet back in 2014? I always remember it to this day.
Wow.
And then, ironically, because I was confused by this, because Craig's avatar on Twitter is an Aston Villa crest. He says, ironically, you're a Villa fan. Never tell anyone they can't achieve something. Thumbs up. 46,000.4 likes, 7,000 retweets, and a lot of people saying,
I'm not sure that Craig ever replied. This was the other thing as well. I hope Craig hasn't muted him or something. He's missed this whole exchange.
Maybe Craig's gone on to bigger things than he expected in his career, and he doesn't have time
Craig's
to be on
an offshore banker now.
But
it does say something about his personality, I guess, that he stored it away. Like a couple of times I've spoken to her, and after, he can be pretty intense after a game. Like he's proved a lot of people wrong. I know it's a real cliche thing, but he has. He's come up the hard way. The profile of a lot of Irish internationals in recent years has been to come that route.
These Cork lads,
they got something about them.
They have, though.
Yeah. And there's a real Cork personality in the Irish team now. Like John Egan was speaking yesterday about how he played hurling against Aaron when they were younger. I think Egan was Bishopstown and Aaron was Bandon. And they both went to Sunderland. They both didn't make it at Sunderland. They both went down the leagues. They both made their Premier League debut on the same day for different clubs, and now they could both play for Ireland in a competitive qualifier on Saturday. They will. And there's Kevin Long, there's Alan Brown as well. But like Harahan in particular, you can imagine that he stored up a lot of the... I'm sure anyone who's released him along the way is probably on a list of some kind, you know? And I'm sure he carries that with him as a confidence booster, that he's silenced various people along the way, including Craig and whoever else agreed with Craig at that point in time.
I don't think it'd be the worst idea in the world to track Craig down and ask him if he wants to come on the show.
You should make it happen.
Yeah. What are your limitations? Well, maybe you didn't believe in yourself, Craig, the way Connor did.
Yeah, maybe you should have more belief in league football.
I retract my, there's something about Cork people, that's just garbage.
Yeah, I mean, why did you say that?
It's just the kind of silly, tempting thing that people say in the media with no real evidence. It's just a kind of whimsical, there's Roy Keane, there's this guy. It's nonsense.
It's a Cork thing. But it is also, I suppose, you can look at the
rest. I would think it's a professional sport thing.
It's the second biggest city, so it's, by population, it's going to have a good chance. But it is true, there is a lot of, there is a Cork core to the team that wasn't always there, to be fair.
I was getting at the feisty,
nature.
The Roy Keane, the Ronan O'Gara, the bit of oomph. Bit of needle in there.
Well, there possibly is something else.
There's not. It's just a subsection of any society. Sonny O'Sullivan's not like that. Dennis Irwin's not like that. It's a professional sport thing.
Yeah.
There's going to be those types.
And I think the Irish dressing room has a lot of them.
School of Hard Knocks.
I think there is, yeah. I think they've all... that's why there's a novelty about the young lads coming through straight from Premier League clubs and academies, that a lot of the others in the group could relate to rejection as a thing. I mean, Enda Stevens, again... down the leagues, back up. You know, you can go through the team, even the likes of McGoldrick and players before, like I think of Walters and people like that. You know, the players who've played in all four leagues that have played for Ireland. I mean, that was one of the things. Conor Harrington scored in all four divisions and said, you know, that was an honour. And Kevin Kleban is coming up soon, said he wasn't the only one, because he's done that too.
The ego on Kev. Just let the tweet go.
Yeah, all four leagues scored for Ireland. Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention about Ireland camp today? We're going to take a short break and then we'll be back with Kev in a second. Anything else of note? James McLean?
Not especially. McLean had a stiff back. He didn't play for Stoke at the weekend and he was doing a bit of training away from the group. There doesn't seem any sense of urgency about it, but we should find out more tomorrow.
Okay.
And also Duffy and McGolder to find out, are they really going to travel to Tbilisi on Thursday or not? I have this niggling suspicion it's more likely that it's Switzerland, if anything. But you never know. I mean, they probably would only been doing proper work at their clubs today, so 24 hours can maybe change a lot.
Yeah, okay. Short ad break. It's 3-2 Ireland. They're still playing at the Tallaght Stadium. It's about to go full-time, and then we're back in just a sec with Kev Kilbane as well.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off The Ball Football Show.
Welcome back. So Ireland have beaten Ukraine 3-2. It's gone full-time. As things stand in the table, Ireland in second on 6 points. Germany are on 12 points with 4 games played. They are flying. Nobody else in the group has any points, although Ukraine have played Germany twice, which slants things slightly. Germany are well clear in this group. Ireland's next game will be away to Greece on the 12th of November. But Jamie Moore, a 3-2 win against the second seeds Ukraine tonight. That's a big win for them.
Yes, it does indeed. I'd say rock around the world. The players and staff doing a lap of honour around Tallaght Stadium, Joe, on a record-breaking night. A crowd of 5,328 have turned up here. A new record attendance for women's international match at Tallaght Stadium. And it finished 3-2. The girls of green have made it 2 wins from 2. And a win in a first match for Vera Powell, the new manager as well. The girls in green went 2-0 up through goals from captain Katie McCabe after Rihanna Jarrett's cross. And then Jarrett herself with a close range header from McCabe's corner. They came in the 25th and 28th minutes. Then disaster for Ireland goalkeeper Marie Hurahan. She dropped a simple cross from a wide free kick. And the Ukraine's Liabob Schmat funded in to make it 2-1. Ireland's main rivals for second spot in this group then equalised 3 minutes before the break after another Irish mistake. A clearance went straight to Ola Olajuk and she scored into the bottom corner despite the best efforts of her hand. And then the winner, Joe, which came 7 minutes after half-time. Megan Campbell's unbelievable long throw sent the player of the match, Rihanna Jarrett, racing towards goal. Her cross found Denise O'Sullivan, whose shot was blocked on the line, but a whacked-off Ukraine defender, Natia Pachelarer, and she was running back towards her own goal and it bounced in to give Ireland the 3 points. And Marie Hurahan, having made that mistake earlier, made a very, very good save in the last minute. It leaves them second in the group, Joe, as you mentioned. They've won 2 from 2 and crucially 6 ahead of Ukraine already, but 1 less game played. Next up is that trip to Greece. And we do remember Ireland played the group leaders, Germany, in 2 of their last 3 matches. So they really want to try and get points on the board in this early stage. And what we love, Joe, is loads of the crowd have hung around and the Irish players in the crowd now taking selfies, signing autographs, taking photos. A really nice moment here in front of a record crowd on a great night for Ireland.
Come on, Jamie. Thanks very much. Jamie Moore there at the Tallaght Stadium. It is a nice touch, actually. It happened the last game as well. They've time to go and meet all the fans.
That's important.
A lot of very excited kids there. Yeah. There's a good vibe.
That's what, like, yeah. That's the whole...
It's the selling point, really.
That is a selling point because it is a generational attempt and... Like, there possibly is a generation that will never get into the habit of going regularly. It's the next one down that matters. And this has to become their normality. So that is the purpose of, I guess, a lot of what this campaign is built towards.
Exciting news. Kevin Kilbane standing by. Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you keeping?
Very well. How are you?
Well, good, yeah. Not bad at all. Just getting on with things, plodding on.
Listen, that's you all over. There's loads to talk about. Needless to say, we'll be checking in on how you're doing. But first, there's Aaron Connolly. There's Everton. A few people want us to ask you about Everton. What's going on there? The Connolly thing is good, though, isn't it? Let's talk about Connolly for a second. This is the real deal.
It's fabulous. I heard Dan, I think he was talking on OTBM on Monday, saying... It was just after the squad was announced, and he was saying that probably Connolly deserved to be in the squad on merit for what he's done this season, the amount of game time he's had for Brighton. So I think what he did at the weekend just put it in everybody's mind that we were all feeling the same, actually. He maybe should have been in, but Mick was loyal to the players that was in and around the squad. And I just think we don't have a buzz around too many Irish players, do we? We don't have that feeling where our lads step up and score 2 Premier League goals in a game on your full Premier League debut. So, yeah, it's something to get excited about, definitely.
Like Kev, there is a great buzz about him, and I think there's a desire for him to play. Like, people just want to see him play. It's not just the Johnny Wards of this world, but you know, a lot of people just want Aaron Connolly to be involved in the game. But where do you actually play him? You know, from your perspective, because James McLean has played regularly. There's a debate over whether McLean plays at full back. It seems like Matt Doherty might be to the forefront of the left back debate. So where does Connolly fit in if you are going to get him into the side?
Yeah, I mean, that's not Galway's Johnny Ward, is it, calling for another Galwegian to get into the squad, is it? No, but anyway, that's for another day, isn't it? Well, do you know, I think it's a big ask, Dan, and you would have seen enough of the team over here. It's a big ask to say, I tell you what, you're going to go and be our number nine. Playing the way that we probably play, trying to get him into the game often, I would always feel it's an easier option for a manager to play them, to play in a while, or play new players or new people that have been introduced into the squad in a wider area, because there is that little bit of support and a bit of help. If you're playing through the middle as a number nine, there's a lot of responsibility. There's been a lot of responsibility on David McGoldrick, when the way that we've played, get hold of the ball, take four and five touches with your back to play. I personally think that's a big ask. If we're going over to Georgia and we're asking to be a number nine, my preference would be to play him in off the wider areas. Certainly, if he's not going to start him, Mick, I'd definitely be thinking, look, he's got to be the first or the second option off the bench. And if we are struggling, then we need a goal, he's got to be that option. So there are a number of positions that you've seen enough of him yourself, Dan. You know that he's not just restricted to playing as a number nine. But I think it does give us hope that we've got a player of his type that we know, that Mick would know now, with him playing or done what he's done at a Premier League level, I could go and put him through the middle. It just might be these two are huge games. I think we know that. And that's the problem I think that we've got right now, that these two big games have maybe come at the wrong time for him, in terms of, I would have loved to have had him in the squad last month for that for that Bulgaria game. But he's in the squad now, and he's in on merit for what he's achieved this season.
And in so much as you can read into anything, the body language in all the newspapers today, all the photos from training yesterday, is really nice. Like, it's Mick sort of smiling and joking with him, and you know that Mick will create a very hospitable environment and Connolly will be welcomed with open arms. And he was high-fiving his under-21 teammates who were kind of almost peering in over the gates at him. So it's amazing for him. If McGoldrick doesn't make it, who does lead the line?
Well, I think there's probably a number of options that's really in there for him, isn't there? There's, of course, Callum Robinson, who played there, who could play there as well. Seanan Maguire, of course, would be another. Would I want to throw him straight into that game, that big game, and go, yes, on you? I don't know, Joe. There would be probably a reluctance within me. And it's nothing to do with age. It's nothing to do with anything else. It's just, I think that is a hugely pressurised game. Two games for him to be thrown in as a number nine. Probably, I think the preference even for Mick would be to try to get him onto the bench, have him within the 18, and get him off the bench at some stage if he can. That would be my preference, I'd feel. But if McGoldrick's out, then he's got to be pushing simply for what he's done this weekend.
Yeah, like you would get the sense, Kev, that maybe James Collins is a contender. I mean, like, we know, that it's not the stereotype, Mick, because it's not fair, because at various times he played Damien Duff through the middle, and like but you do feel that, for the type of game that it might be for Georgia and Switzerland, that Mick, if he doesn't have McGoldrick, he's going to want that number nine, that a bit more of a presence. You would have thought that Collins might tick the boxes?
Possibly, but the way that we always think of Mick McCarthy's teams having a big number nine, having a big striker that's going to be able to play, as I was saying before, these back to goal. But in fairness to Mick, he took a chance on someone like Robbie, and I know that Robbie was progressing, but Robbie wouldn't have been the sort of player that would have been a stereotypical Mick McCarthy player. He was a player that liked to play on the shoulder defenders, that liked to drop deep, that liked to float into wider areas, that almost was, you couldn't restrict him to the position that he was taking up. So I wouldn't label or pigeonhole Mick McCarthy to say, well, that is his type of player. Yes, McGoldrick would be the player that you'd associate with him. Daryl Murphy, for the times that he would have had him at Sunderland and Ipswich as well. But I think Mick is the sort of manager that if someone's playing well and they're going well in training and you impress him, he'll throw you in.
Well, you know,
and I think that could be the case.
The two things that would jump out at you about Connolly early on are, does he have the technical ability to play a hold-up role if needs be? If it's explained to him, I need you to get on the ball, take a few touches and bring a midfielder into it. Clearly he does. Does he have the intelligence to do that? Clearly he does. You could just see it in his movement at the weekend that he does have smarts about him. What it might come down to is his personality. Like, it was funny, Dan was saying that Mick even referenced your debut against Iceland today just to say, look how brilliant a career Kev had. And yet, debuts are tricky. They're new, they're tough. So I guess the unknowable here, from our point of view, is Connolly's personality, his demeanour around the place. Because, like, Robbie had the swagger and was like, get out of the way, old man, let me in. And we don't know where Connolly is in that spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to you in reference to myself about my debut, and I genuinely put too much pressure on myself. I'd built it up to be something it probably wasn't. And again, Dan would have seen a lot of him. Dan's probably spoke to him post-match after games and even pre-match. Dan would have spoken to him. And the sense that I get from him, even watching him at the weekend, he doesn't seem to have that fear within him. He doesn't seem to be the sort of player that would be intimidated about going out to play the weekend. But it's okay if you go out and you play and you can play with that freedom. But how are we going to get him into the game if we go over to Georgia and Georgia dominate the ball? Because he did it against Denmark as well in their last game. They dominated. So how are we going to get him into the game then? Mm. He's coming off the pitch, trudging off the pitch, and he has been a bit isolated. He's not necessarily got himself into the game a lot. That takes discipline for a younger lad. You know, watching him play for Brighton this season and seeing how they're playing and progressing, he's not restricted to a number nine if you watch him. And in fairness, the back three or back four, however they've played midfield, there's a lot of flexibility and a lot of movement within the side. We won't play like that. So that's the thing with him. Yeah. Are you going to say to him, you've got to free a role? I don't think Mick can afford to do that because I think there's too much at stake for these two games.
Mm. He's definitely got personality, Kev. There's no doubt about that from everything you hear about him. But I'm just curious, like you would have seen a lot of players come into the squad during your time. Like, what are the other players looking for from him this week? Like, what are they thinking? Because they'll have heard a bit, and I'm sure there's probably a few of the older fellas are like, what's all this hype about this 21s team? It would probably be a natural sentiment to feel. Like, what are they looking for?
Yeah, I'd probably say they're not looking for anything, but I think they're probably waiting almost, right, come on then, show me what you've got. Let's see it. And then if it's not quite there on the first day, there's probably a few little whispers getting onto the bus. It's not the best of days, that lad today, has he? That's what generally does happen. I hope he's gone in and played with that swagger that you spoke about there in training today and in the last couple of days, and he's just gone out and tried to express himself. I don't imagine it'd be any different with him. I can't see it being any different. I think the way that Mick Taylor's training, he would enjoy the type of training that Mick would put on for him. So I think he could express himself.
You'd be fizzing the ball at him 90 miles an hour in the first few minutes of the little five-a-side, wouldn't you?
You're not, Joe. Well, now you're just, well, I'd say something. Well, you are. You're being a dick now, so I wouldn't do that. You know,
wouldn't players would do that, though, wouldn't they? They'd test him out.
I wouldn't do that to him, and you know I wouldn't do that to him.
Let's get on to the interesting situation, which is your dancing on ice career.
That's the only thing you want to talk about, Joe? Let's be honest.
It's on Instagram if you want to follow it closely.
Are you being paid by the Instagram? How does this work?
No, I'm being serious now. I couldn't get out of bed on Sunday. It was I've missed 3 days on the ice because I literally couldn't get out of bed on Sunday. Seriously struggling.
Your
back. I fell on my back last week. I think I'd said that to you, and it's been quite painful. So, but I've been told by a few people that I'm a soft soccer player. That's what I'm, according to some people. Yeah.
So, how many sessions on the ice have you done at this stage, Kev?
Four. I've done four. Yeah. So I'll get another three this week, and then I'll be back over to Dublin for a few days, and then I'll be back on the ice again next week. So, I'm not behind schedule or anything because I tried to get a couple in last week as it was, but it's just it's very sobering. Realising how bad I am, and I'm trying to get better and better, and it's just not happening.
Because you should have more coordination, clearly, than a lot of the contestants there. You know, there'll be some of them who just will have no sporting ability whatsoever.
It's different having sporting ability and walking or trying to skate on ice.
But you've got coordination.
Yeah, I probably do. I'll have a little bit of coordination, but it's very different. At the moment, me hope is dwindling away. That's what it is.
He's got to work in tandem with his partner, not overlap them and go on their outside, like would be his natural move.
Yeah, no overlaps.
Yeah, I'm just with a trainer. I'm literally being coached the basics at the moment. I'm with a trainer and with a coach who's working with me like day in, day out, trying to get me the basics of just basically the basic techniques, and then trying to build from the basic techniques. And the basic techniques for me are tough. So yeah.
Did I see you on the ice with Torvald and Dean? Was that part of the thing? What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was quite funny. Well, that's when I fell on my backside. Well, I fell on my back. I genuinely had a heavy fall. I thought I broke my rib. I was in bits. And it was a surreal experience because I'm on the ice and I've got Michael Barrymore and Trisha Goddard helping me up off the floor. And then as I'm being sat down on the side, I'm being comforted by Torvald and Dean. So that was a surreal experience, let me tell you that. I've got a sentence. Trying to help me out, you know. What can you say? Jesus,
there's names being dropped everywhere.
It's unbelievable.
You should see the WhatsApp group.
That's how he's got back pain.
Oh, is there a WhatsApp group? Yeah.
There's a WhatsApp group. Yeah.
Oh, I want to look at that.
Who's the most active member of the WhatsApp group?
No, we're not talking. I can't discuss that, Dan. I'm not going to discuss that with you. But it's very active. That's what I would
say. Is H from Steps in your phone now? Is H, or do you have a full name, or is he just in as H?
No, he's not in. He is in as H. Yeah, not Ian. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
And do you have any questions? And like, is it just like Barrymore when the phone rings? Is that how you have me?
No, Joey's not rang me yet. So no, he might never ring me. Let's be honest.
In the photo I saw of you with Torvald Dean, you put it up on your Instagram and you were like, so I can imagine, you know, like how tentative you would be when you're out in the ice and it's very hard. Obviously, you don't want to fall. So you were kind of, if people hadn't seen it, if they're not on Instagram, they were either side of you. And you were kind of like, well, I mean, it was as if you were squatting over a bog. That's kind of the position you were in. You were like squatting over a bog, rigid.
I think the camera caught me at a bad angle there, Joe. I think I may have been losing my feet and I was caught and I've tried to squat myself into a position to soften the fall if I was going to fall. But no, Joe, no. I don't know how they got that photo of me, but it's a great photo nonetheless. So
I wanted to ask, from that squat position, how quickly you got to a point. God, this is great. We've got months of this ahead of us. How quickly you got to a point, genuinely, where you were like, you know, probably a bit of trepidation to have been able to even skate reasonably freely and competently, you know, from one end to the other end?
No, I can do that anyway. I can skate freely. I've been able to do that. I've been out skating with my daughters in the last couple of years, but that's not the issue. It's the basic techniques that surround it, where you're trying to skate on one leg and you're trying to get your push-offs and things like this. It's not even making sense to you now, Joe, but I'm trying to get basic techniques right and I'm struggling with them.
No, I was just pointing because we put up the picture of you with Torvald and Dean, so that's
good. Oh, cheers, right.
It looks like you've been helped off a plane or something. It sort of has that sort of look.
It looks like you've sullied yourself and they're helping you. I would think skating on one leg sounds incredibly tough.
Well, the thing is, when you're pushing off one leg, so one leg, you're trying to get your balance on one leg with one leg going behind you at a certain angle. So then you kick off one leg, bring them together, kick off. So you go left together, right together, and you're trying to kick off and get your techniques like that. Whereas because of my back and my lower back anyway, when I kick off on my right side, I'm all over the place. When I kick off my left and I'm going onto my right leg, I can't pick my left leg up high enough to get it in sync with my right. So it's forcing me all over the place at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it's not easy.
If that makes sense to you, Joe.
Well, even if it doesn't now, I'll see it in due course, don't worry. It'll be on TV in front of the guts of 10 million people. Have we thought about musical choices yet?
I've been asked about musical choices.
Come on, then.
No, there's no need to talk. We'll discuss that in due course, Joe. Just relax yourself. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Ole, ole, ole.
There's a long way to go, yeah.
There'll be a big reveal on that at some stage, Joe.
The green and red of Mayo.
Possibly.
I can't
confirm or deny it.
What Ireland song do we want?
He just has to go for the medley from the Alan Partridge. What was the guy from the farmer from Sligo?
Oh,
the men behind the wire. That could be your
tanks and guns.
If you could get that on BBC One and ITV in the space of 6 months.
Oh, I mean, tell you what, now that's the plan.
And Martin Murphy, I think.
Some kind of green and red sequin outfit as well.
Martin Brennan, that was it, yeah.
Some kind of green and red sequin outfit as well, I presume.
Yeah, I was asked about colours. I was asked about colours as well, Joe. Again, I can't, Joe, you know, I'm not going to spoil it. You know, you'll have to wait and see. You have to tune in on the 5th of January and you'll see.
If people are wondering about the full contestant list, Dan, we have Caprice. We have Trisha Goddard, who Kev mentioned there. Morning talk show Trisha, that Trisha Goddard. We have Ben Hanlon, who's an ITV2 magician. I'm not too sure. I haven't come across him. We have Perry Kylie, who's a dancer with diversity.
Oh, he's.
We have Lisa George, who plays Beth in Coronation Street. We have H from Steps, aka Ian Watkins. We have Michael Barrymore. We have Maura Higgins. We have Libby Clegg, Paralympic gold medalist, first ever blind contestant on the show. Good luck to her. And then Joe Swash from EastEnders, who plays Mickey. Who have you hit it off with?
Oh, they're all good, yeah. Barrymore's mother's from Belmullet, so, you know, a good male man there at heart, you know.
Just Barrymore.
I've got honestly got on well with him, having a good crack with him in the WhatsApp group, as I'm saying. So yeah, I'm getting on with it, you know.
Well, listen. So when are you back in the ice? When's this back up to scratch?
Yeah, I'll be back. Well, it's not. It's sore. It's still sore, but painkillers and everything. I'll be back on tomorrow morning. Yeah.
All right, good man. Good man. So Everton before you go.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you see anything at the weekend, Joe? Did you watch them?
No, I haven't seen much. It's kind of crept up on me that they've lost four in a row, and there's even pieces in the Telegraph now. You know, Marco Silva will continue as Everton manager ahead of must-win West Ham match. I didn't realise it had suddenly come to those terms that we're into must-win territory. So they lost four in a row. They've obviously spent a lot of money over the summer. He's in his second of a three-year contract. Yeah. Is it that dire? Is he in that much heat?
Yeah, well, without a doubt, he has 14 goals as well in the last six games. You know, they had two clean sheets in the opening two matches, and they've conceded at least two since that. It has been grim. And even at the weekend against Burnley, and I was talking around the game. I was in the BBC studio with John Walters at the weekend. We were chatting away. John obviously has got a lot of knowledge of how Burnley go about things and what Sean Dyche does. And John was talking about the fact that Sean Dyche will target Everton's weakness at set pieces. 22 goals Marco Silva's Everton have conceded since the start of last season. 6-8 this season now. And the stat is staggering around Silva as well, Joe. I know you're a good stats man yourself, but 45 goals conceded in 88 Premier League matches since he's come into the Premier League in January 2017. And that's not including penalties. It's every time Everton have a corner against them or a wide free kick, they look vulnerable. It's a setup. And if you watch the goal they conceded the weekend, Jeff Hendrick getting the goal, it was just, you know, very much worked on the training ground. How do you beat a zonal mark? And I've sat in studio, tried to explain it in the past. You always feel it's either a quick short corner that's moved and you're getting them out of sync, or a near post or a far post corner. There's three options that you would try to hit, definitely. And Burnley hit the far post corner. And what Tarkowski did, he just pushed Everton's defence under the ball, wouldn't let them react to the ball that was played beyond them. And Jeff Hendrick just had a free run. No one marking him. No one blocking him when he arrived from the edge of the penalty area. And on the face of it, it's actually a brilliantly worked goal. But that stat, when Everton go down to 10 men at the weekend, the one thing you need to get right is just sort out your set pieces. Don't concede from set pieces and stay in the game. And I thought it was a harsh yellow card, second yellow for Seamus Coleman. But once he got the red, Everton were always going to be a bit more vulnerable because they probably were the better team up to Seamus Coleman getting sent off. And then all of a sudden they conceded from another set piece and it's game over for them. They didn't ever look like they were going to go and get themselves back into the game. So that stat around Silva is alarming. But in the final third of the pitch, Joe, when you're seeing Everton, for all the money that they spend, the player.
Oh, you gone? Sorry about that.
That was a sudden departure.
Well, I almost know what he's going to say. For all the money they've spent, they haven't really been cutting teams open. And the game I did see Everton live was that Friday night game away to Aston Villa when they were beaten 2-0.
Yeah.
And they were 1-0 down for quite a chunk of that game, and then they were Everton supposedly trying to push for an equaliser, and they really just ran out of ideas, and Villa nicked a goal late on to put a 2-0 sheen on the scoreline. So since then, the four defeats, by the way, like, they were beaten by Man City.
They played okay against Man City. I actually saw that game.
Yeah.
And they lost to Bournemouth. Was that one of them?
Bournemouth 3-1. Yeah. They lost a killer one is a 2-0 loss at home to Sheffield United. Then came the City defeat and then Burnley at the weekend. So in and of themselves, like, nothing disastrous. They haven't taken a 6 or 7-0 hiding. Kev, I presume you were going to say, and it was a point I sort of echoed, having seen the Aston Villa game away that Friday night, that for all the money they've spent, I presume you're about to say they're not exactly lighting it up at the other end either?
No, they're not. And that's what makes the set pieces all the more important for them, given the record from set pieces, which they can't seem to keep sides out against. The other end of the pitch has got to be right. And Sigurdsson hasn't been firing out. I believe Sigurdsson would have been left out of the side in the Man City game a couple of weeks ago. But Bernard got, I think he called in sick on the day of the game. Now, if that was the case, you're leaving a £45 million player out the side. Richarlison is another one who's a little bit inconsistent. Another thing that was said to me the other week as well, there's only six times since the Premier League's been formed that an Everton player has scored 15 or more goals. And you're going back to Kanchelskis and Cotty being two of those in the early 90s.
Right.
Other than that, you've got Yakubu and Lukaku three times. So there lies your problem. Everton don't have a player that you've seriously fancied to go and get 15, 20 goals in a season.
Just, Kev, on a slight Everton team, But Phil Neville's son, Harvey's been named in an Irish under 19 squad today. This is sort of taking a lot of people by surprise. Was this something, I don't know, did you anticipate this was coming when you were aware of that connection?
No, never. I spoke to Phil around Harvey loads since he's been progressing. So no, I wasn't expecting it. I don't know if it's through Phil's side of the family or his mum's side of the family.
It's the mum's side of the family, yeah.
His maternal grandmother.
Mm. Yeah, no, I didn't know anything about that. Phil had never mentioned it to me. Do you want me to elaborate on that?
Well,
what do you want me to say? I don't know. Fair play to him. I don't know.
You're sort of slightly on the fence about it a bit.
Well, you know what? It's not just because it's Phil or anybody else.
No.
But, you know, how I feel about it. I personally think that if he's progressing and does well as he gets older and he's in contention for a senior spot, I don't know. I don't agree with getting lads in at that young age to get them in with a view to, I'm sure it's been mentioned to him, look, if you play well for us, there is still a chance you can go and play for the country that you want to go and play for. I don't believe that's the right way to go about it. I don't think it's the right policy. I don't.
Mm. Yeah, now there's quite a number of members of the squad, it must be said. There's a guy at Spurs. There's a couple in a similar boat. Jamie Bowden, who's around the first team at Spurs, who's been called into the Ireland squad as well. I mean, this is it's a friendly match this week, you see. So this is now the culture that at international friendlies, lads can be dropped into the squad, really, and it's a free hit for everyone concerned. You know,
it doesn't prohibit them from going back.
No, this is a friendly. This is two friendly games. So England are doing it as well. Everyone's doing it. Like that, these squads, these particularly the under 17, under 19 level, these friendly windows. It's now commonplace. So it's common practice.
Come in and see how you like it, kind of thing.
Pretty much, yeah. Come and have a look. Shop around, basically.
Yeah. Have a look at us, yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. Well, no, it's not great. We're out of time. Kev, thanks so much. Best of luck tomorrow. Yeah, go on.
I just wanted to say well done on your nomination for the IMRO last weekend, Sports Broadcaster of the Year.
Cheers,
really
Kev.
Proud of you. Got another nomination, Joel. Well done, mate. Great stuff.
Cheers, Kev. Listen, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
No, I'm proud of you. Proud of you.
I'm proud of you too.
Good man. Good man.
Back after the break.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
All right, welcome back. So we're pretty much done for the evening, Dan. Any final thoughts on anything going on in the world?
Yeah, no, the Everton chat is obviously interesting. Like, you are in your international window. You wonder, is anyone going to get the chop during it? You know, Silva would be up the top of the list. See, Sunderland got rid of their manager today.
Yeah.
Different story than in League One, obviously. But you kind of wonder, where Everton are at.
It's around this time where it starts. The jury's out in Silva a little bit.
It is, No, like, he had such a great reputation, even at Watford and Hull. But I mean, the set pieces thing, you go back to last year, they went out of a cup game to Millwall, I think it was.
Yeah.
They were so vulnerable in set pieces, and they really just haven't addressed that issue.
We rabbited on there a bit, so we're kind of tight for time now. October 15th, by the way, we're in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. Michael Lynagh, Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, Paul Howard, Malcolm O'Kelly, Danny O'Reilly from the Coronas, and former South African captain Bobby Skinstad, rather. Offtheball.com/events is the place to go for tickets, all in association with Heineken, official worldwide partner to Rugby World Cup Japan 2019. Visit drinkaware.ie. We're back tomorrow, usual time, 7 o'clock. Nathan Murphy in the hot seat, Wednesday Night Rugby and more. And then OTBAM tomorrow. Offtheball.com is where you can listen to that or get the Go Loud app. Brezzy is going to be co-hosting with Jer. That's live from 7:30. Tom Dunn on the way next. Good luck.
Give you move with guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta.